Welcome to the program God and Country. I'm your Bible teacher, Pastor Brad Winship. At the beginning of October, the Republicans were holding out on the continuing budget resolution until President Obama did two things: a one-year delay on the implementation of Obamacare and rescinding Congress's special exemption from Obamacare. But on October 17th, there was another issue. The government was going to hit the debt ceiling of $16.7 trillion. The government could not borrow any money until Congress authorized a raising of the debt ceiling. And without borrowed money, the government would really shut down, because 40 cents on every dollar the government spends is borrowed money. Now, usually, the Republican-controlled House uses this debt issue to get some spending cuts from the Democrats in the Senate and from the White House. This happened under Bill Clinton. This happened last year with the sequester cuts. But this time, the president and the Democrats in the Senate did not believe it was necessary to give in to the demands of the Republicans, because the public is so much against a government shutdown. The people want their programs, government employees want their paychecks, and the Republicans would get bad press, as if they're evil for wanting to stop the out-of-control spending. So the House folded, raising the debt ceiling, authorizing the continual budget resolution, without getting any concessions on Obamacare or on spending cuts. They were not even able to take away Congress's special exemption from having to be under Obamacare. And this is a very strange state of affairs in Washington. And I would like to discuss with you what is really going on morally and spiritually. And that's the purpose of God and Country Radio, to give you a biblical perspective. As Jesus said, do not judge according to appearances, but judge righteous judgment. The problems are always not what they appear to be outwardly. And certainly the media doesn't correctly diagnose the problem. The spiritual malady in America is denial. Disaster will not come upon us. And that is one of the key spiritual problems that we're dealing with. We've seen this happen before in Israel's collapse. The Old Testament prophets specifically and often addressed this attitude in Israel that led to her fall. Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 13. They have lied about the Lord and said, not he. Misfortune will not come upon us, and we will not see sword or famine. In Isaiah's oracle against Babylon, Isaiah 47. Now then, hear this, you sensual one, who dwells securely, who says in your heart, I am, and there's no one besides me. I will not sit as a widow, nor know the loss of children. You felt secure in your wickedness and said, no one sees me. Your wisdom and your knowledge, they have deluded you. For you have said in your heart, I am, and there is no one besides me. But evil will come upon you, which you will not know how to charm away. And disaster will fall on you, for which you cannot atone. And destruction about which you do not know will come upon you suddenly. Now, what we saw in Washington this month was the economic manifestation of this attitude. And this same disaster will not come upon us attitude is in the social moral outlook of the nation. But how people use money is usually an indicator of other spiritual values. Denial in the area of economics is the tip of the iceberg. It's what we see above the surface. So even though I am addressing economic issues, understand that this denial first begins in people's relationship with God and in their attitude toward their personal sin. And if there is denial in spiritual matters, there will also be denial in material matters. If people are denying that their sin will result in bad consequences, will they not also act this way in the mishandling of their money? Now, what do I mean that the problem we have in Washington is denial? Well, the government is borrowing between $1 trillion and $1.5 trillion a year. And that's unsustainable, But the majority of our leaders in Washington are not interested in cutting spending. If you or I were elected to the high office, we could fix the problem very easily. A 15 to 20% cut across the board. Every government program gets cut 15%. Every government salary gets cut 15%. Every government pension gets cut 15%. Every Social Security check gets cut 15%. Better that we all be a little bit poorer right now than in a few years have the complete collapse of the American economy. Rand Paul has even suggested a much less painful approach. Rather than giving automatic increases to every government program, over the next 10 years, each year cut 1% from the government budget. Just 1%. And in 10 years, the budget will be balanced. But the majority in Washington is not interested in any of these cuts. If they make any cuts, the media and the people will blacklist them as uncompassionate. The public will throw them out of office. Now, I'm hearing many conservative bloggers say that the people of America are on the side of the fiscally responsible politician. The politicians really don't represent the will of the people. We send them to Washington to balance the budget, but something happens to them when they get there, and they become cowards and they capitulate. You know, I used to think that way until I learned the truth. The majority of Americans do not want any government cuts. They might say they want fiscal responsibility, but they still vote for socialists who support government largesse and handouts. Cutting government is the third rail in American politics. Touch it and you're dead. Now, of course, there are some regions in America that don't believe in big government. They understand government is inefficient, wasteful, and the government really doesn't have to take care of every aspect of our lives. But those congressional districts are in the minority. Steve Lonergan lost by 10 points to Cory Booker in the New Jersey Senate race. It wasn't even close. Why? Steve Lonergan is a fiscal conservative, cut the size of government politician. But the majority of the people in New Jersey want socialism. And those conservatives who think that we would turn Washington around if the politicians would just stand up for what's right, don't realize that if they stood up for what is right, they wouldn't even be there in the first place. They wouldn't get reelected if they tried to straighten out Washington. I had a friend suggest to me that maybe the voting booths in the Lonergan-Booker race were tampered with. Well, I wish they were, because that would mean we could fix the liberal leaning of America by policing the machines. But I'm afraid the problem is much worse. It's the brains of the American people that have been tampered with. The people of America want the politician who will promise the world and keep the illusion going that we can borrow 40 cents on the dollar in America and nothing bad is going to happen. The money can simply be printed and our government is just too big to fail. Jeremiah 5:31, the prophets prophesy falsely, and the priests rule by their own authority, and my people love it so, but what will you do in the end of it? You know, conservatives tend to surround themselves with other conservatives, and they assume that everyone is like them, but if you get out there and talk to the people, people are in denial about the economic disaster that's about to befall them, and anyone who says that we must stop the spending is ridiculed. They're being called uncompassionate. There was an article in World Magazine last week, written by, Mark Rogers, a political lobbyist with the Clapham Group, chief of staff for Rick Santorum, and Jed Metafine, president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans, who is part of George Bush's faith-based initiatives. They wrote an article explaining that the public does not see Republicans as compassionate. The article states the Republican National Committee released its Growth and Opportunity Project report, which has rightly observed that the perception that the GOP does not care about people is doing great harm to the party and its candidates on a federal level, especially in presidential years. It's a major deficit that must be addressed. Now, the article explains the irony here because conservatives give a much larger percentage of their income to charity, they volunteer more, and they're even more likely to help their neighbor than those who identify themselves as liberal. Republican states give more charity than Democrat states. But Rogers and Medifine go on to list some social programs that the Republicans can get behind to become more charitable and improve their image. They write, if people suspect that you don't care about them, they will rarely follow you, no matter how right your solutions may sound. I see the problem differently, because these men, in their analysis, didn't consider that there might be a moral problem with American voters, that this desire for compassion may not actually be compassion at all, but greed. Greed for government handouts and government security. I heard one pundit recently say few folks in your neighborhood will break into their neighbors' houses, into banks, into offices to steal things for themselves, but many of them will vote for politicians who will do it for them. Maybe the people are not voting for politicians they consider compassionate, but for politicians who will give them what they want. And this is the typical fallen condition of humanity. This is more in line with the New Testament analysis of the problem. That people are, as it says in 2 Timothy 4, heaping to themselves teachers, or rather politicians, in accordance to their own desires, and turning away their ears from the truth. And the solution is not to get behind more government programs, but we need a nation of pastors and teachers and civic leaders who teach, thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not covet your neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male servant, or his female servant, or his oxen, or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Exodus 20:17. But let me get back to this spiritual condition of denial. Along with greed, people are putting their heads in the sand, thinking that no disaster will come upon us. We don't have to cut spending. Woe to the politician who cuts spending. Let's take Social Security, for example. There is no Social Security Trust Fund. Every penny that now comes into Social Security is spent by the federal government to pay for current bureaucratic salaries and Social Security outlays. 62.5 million individuals receive a benefit from Social Security. There are only 155 million people who are working. The baby boom generation started retiring in 2010. And over the next 19 years, 300,000 people will retire every month. And the population in America of those above 65 will jump from 13% to 20%. Now you know why the government is borrowing $1.5 trillion a year to operate. But this baby boom generation wants their Social Security. And they want politicians to put a Band-Aid on the system to keep it going because they want it to work. Woe be to the politician who suggests cutting Social Security so that there will be enough money to go around. Therefore, the politicians dutifully raise the debt ceiling to put off the disaster till tomorrow. And you know that the government, in trying to handle this crisis, along with borrowing, is printing $85 billion a month. It's called quantitative easing. I could dedicate a whole God and Country program to the government printing money to buy bonds. But you know what the end effect is going to be. Inflation. There's no political will to cut Social Security, so instead the government cuts Social Security through inflation. Retirees will think that they're getting their $1,600 a month in Social Security because that's what the number says on the check. But in real dollars, you're only getting $600. It's a lie, and the people fall for it. Let's talk about government workers. The government is $17 trillion in debt, but that does not include the $95 trillion the government is in debt to future obligations, including future Social Security payments, the retirement of the federal workforce. The money's not there. There are 2.1 million employees of the federal government, And that's a lot. I can't imagine what they all do. But that doesn't include the 2.2 million in the military. And if we add up all government workers, federal, state, teachers, police, military, it's about 22 million. Guess how those people are going to vote? They don't want politicians who will cut government spending because that might threaten their job. Many of them are getting ready to retire and they don't want any changes until they get out. And I'm constantly hearing from government employees, and I'm sure you are too, that they are counting the days to their retirement. And they are voting for the party that will keep the government running and keep up the illusion until they get their retirement. They might even know it's an illusion. They might even sense that the government is in trouble, but it's like a game of musical chairs. When the music stops, they want to be in the chair. This is a combination of greed coupled with denial. Now, I know this is a bleak picture of humanity, but this is the biblical picture. Let me get back to the biblical exposition here. A predominant message of the Old Testament prophets before the collapse of Israel was that the people were in denial. The false prophets, who were the political pundits of the day, were telling people to party on. The true prophets of the Lord, who are hated by the people for telling them the truth, were saying that they need to stop the moral sin and the greed because disaster is coming. Just like today. Any true statesman who warns of the economic collapse of America is despised by the people. Micah 3:11, they lean on the Lord saying, "Is not the Lord in our midst? Calamity will not come upon us." Jeremiah chapter 6 verse 14 and Jeremiah chapter 8 verse 10, they have healed the brokenness of my people superficially saying, "Peace, peace," but there is no peace. And the idea here is that the false prophets and politicians have only put a bandage on an incurable situation. Saying peace, peace means that peace and prosperity will come to Israel and there will be no disaster. Jeremiah 23:17. These false prophets keep saying to those who despise me, "The Lord has said you will have peace." As for everyone who walks in the stubbornness of his own heart, they say, "Calamity will not come upon you." Isaiah 28:15. Because you have said, "We have made a covenant with death, and with hell we have made a pact. The overwhelming scourge will not reach us when it passes by, for we have made falsehood our refuge, and we have concealed ourselves with deception." Isaiah 30, verse 10. The people say to the seers, "You must not see visions," and to the prophets, "You must not prophesy to us what is right. Speak to us pleasant words. Prophesy illusions. Get out of the way. Turn aside from the path. Let us hear no more about the Holy One of Israel." Ezekiel 13:10. They have misled my people by saying peace when there is no peace. And when anyone builds a wall, they plaster it over with whitewash. And here's where we get the phrase whitewash in the situation. If you go to the liberal websites and news sites, the conservative right are called liars. Obamacare will work. Socialism will work. There is no financial crisis. There is plenty of money to go around. Are they right? Who's telling the truth? Given the moral condition of America, I tend to believe that the liberals, being Republicans or Democrats, who are borrowing trillions to keep government largesse, are the false prophets in denial about the coming consequences. Now, I know their arguments. They say, "No, we are the compassionate ones. The conservatives are the greedy ones, not wanting to share the wealth." And I would almost believe them if it wasn't for the fact that the bulk of government programs are a waste of money. They're not helping the poor. But the excesses of government are being used to fund a bureaucratic class of overlords. To so tax individuals and companies so that the government has all the money to hire the people and not the private sector. This is communism. And the lie of communism has always been that they wanted to help the little guy. Now, let me quickly identify some of the specific reasons given in the biblical text as to why Israel thought disaster would not come. And you judge if that mindset is not similar to the mindset of many in America today. First, the people of Israel believed that they were God's nation and that God would defend his name, the nation would never collapse. As in the Micah 3:11 text, they lean on the Lord saying, "Is not the Lord in our midst? Calamity will not come upon us." Jeremiah 7:4, "Do not trust in deceptive words, saying the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord." In other words, the people were claiming that because the temple of God was in their country, they were undefeatable. Now, this was all couched in religious terms, but you see the same too big and too great to fail attitude in the American civil religion. That America is the last great hope for the world, that democracy is the answer and will always succeed, or as Lincoln said in the Gettysburg Address, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. People really don't believe America can collapse. Second, the people of Israel did not believe the prophet's message of disaster because they didn't believe that they were doing anything wrong, or rather that their sin wasn't really that bad. Judgment would not come because it wasn't deserved. Particularly, they measured goodness by their formal practices of religion. But the prophets would tell them that their religion was in vain because they didn't live clean lives. All of their prayers and their sacrifices were of no avail because of their immorality and their greed. Jeremiah 7:9, "Will you steal, murder, and commit adultery and swear falsely and offer sacrifices to Baal and walk after other gods that you have not known? Then come and stand before me in this house, which is called by my name, and say, 'We're delivered,' that you may do all of these abominations." God wasn't interested in their religious rituals. He was interested in the people turning from their sin. And it was really self-righteousness that led the people to believe judgment would not come and led them to continue on their destructive path. A disbelief in sin led to a disbelief in judgment, which led to a continuing of the status quo. That's exactly what's happening in America. Third, the people of Israel did not believe the prophetic message of disaster because they faced problems like this before and they made it through it. Israel had faced the threat of enemies before and the nation survived. The Assyrians invaded Israel 100 years earlier and King Hezekiah defeated them. Around the same time, God says to Ezekiel in Ezekiel chapter 12, verse 22, "Son of man, what is this proverb you people have concerning the land of Israel, saying the days are long and every vision fails?" The proverb that the people of Israel were saying meant this, that these prophets have been preaching the collapse of Israel for years, but the vision fails. It doesn't come to pass. They have cried wolf way too often. And you hear people saying today, well, you know, there's been these doomsday evangelical preachers who for years have said that the American economy will collapse. And it hasn't happened. In fact, in the 70s and in the early 80s, it was all over for America. But then in the 90s, there was an economic boom, the computer revolution, the internet, cell phones. One well-known conservative personality has an entire chapter of his book dedicated to refuting the doomsday prophets in America. And his main argument is that America in the past has had serious moral failures: slavery, drunkenness, the opium trade, the wild, wild, immoral West, the corruption in the Roaring Twenties. And there have been corrupt politicians with their hands in the till since the beginning of America. Look at all the slums and the poverty and the social injustice during the Industrial Revolution. And America has been in serious debt before. And after these times of corruption, it is followed by a social conservative movement, which puts the nation back on track. So what makes this time any different? Well, the answer to this argument that America has faced problems before and we've made it through it is that, yes, we have had corrupt times in American history, but we paid an awful price. 500,000 Americans died in the Civil War. Millions died in World War I and World War II. The Great Depression and the Dust Bowl was devastating. Ancient Israel also had major defeats and setbacks in her 400 years of history. But that didn't rule out the big day of the final judgment. In fact, those lesser national defeats foreshadowed and warned of the future final defeat. And even this author admits that one thing might be different this time in America's social problem. In the past, even with national greed and immorality rampant, America's intellectual, spiritual leadership was moral and good. But now, at Yale and other Ivy League institutions in America, they are hosting sex fairs and gay life celebrations. The mainline denominations are pro-abortion and pro-homosexuality. And the anti-God secular state is codified in the law. So don't think America's moral corruption is no different than the past. As if we're going to overcome this like we've overcome other social ills. Let me quote from this commentator. "The obstacle to a sweeping restoration of values remains overwhelming. An effort to roll back immorality faces formidable government bureaucracies, official regulations, the smug assurance of nearly all of academia, and the ceaseless special pleading in the mass media meant to protect and glamorize the most deeply dysfunctional values." Unquote. America may have gotten to the place where her wounds are incurable, just like the prophets said about Israel. Oh, there will be a cure, but only through serious chastisement. So what does all this mean for you and me and the Christian community? Well, don't believe those who are saying peace, peace, when there is no peace. Those who are saying disaster will not come upon us. And understand that this denial, along with greed, is driving voters and politicians to do nothing to fix the economic train wreck, let alone nothing to fix the moral train wreck that's coming. And understand that people don't want to be told the truth. The man with the truth is the enemy. Instead, it's all the fault of the conservative branch of the Republican Party for wanting to put the brakes on socialized medicine and deficit spending. Just like in the Old Testament, it was Jeremiah's fault, it was Ezekiel's fault, it was Isaiah's fault for being a naysayer and a party pooper. And work these biblical truths into your message. When your liberal co-workers want answers, tell them that people are voting for the left's liberal economic and social policies because they're in denial. They think that government largesse and control can continue and there'll be no disaster. Why do we give this message? Because this is the message of the prophets, and you're on safe ground if in your witness you follow the scriptural emphasis. People will say peace and safety before sudden destruction will come upon them. Thank you for listening today. This has been God and Country Radio. You can listen to this message again or other past messages in our archives at godandcountryradio.org. There you can send me an email with questions, comments, insights. I personally answer all of my emails. The website is godandcountryradio.org. Spell it out, godandcountryradio.org. You can email me from there. The email address is godandcountryradio@verizon.net. And I would delight to hear from you. Let's close in prayer. Father in heaven, help your people discern the real root of our nation's sin. Help us have a message that lays the axe to the root of the tree. And with the right message, may we disclose the secrets of men's hearts and awaken lost souls to the truth. In the name of Jesus Christ, we ask. Amen.